Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's Managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Monday edition of The Yard. It's been one of those days, kids. You know, it's like you wake up in the morning and things just don't quite seem right. You know, like you have your day planned mentally, like, okay, I know what I got to tackle on Monday. And maybe you even prepare a little bit, maybe even sneak a little work in on Sunday to kind of prepare for Monday. Is it just me? No, it's not. And then all of a sudden you get up and it's like, oh, I've got this going on. And you're like, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? And next thing you know, you got other people that are just kind of stealing your time away. And that's, you know, part of life. Things don't always go according to script. But nevertheless, I'm grateful to be ending my work day with all of you. This feels like a joy. You know, just kind of sitting down talking about, you know, really good sports weekend at Mississippi State. Nearly a perfect sports weekend. We're going to talk about it all. And we'll look ahead also to Tuesday's basketball and baseball game. A couple big days for Mississippi State sports on Tuesday. You know, two events on the same day. But good top 10 list for you today. We're just going to relax and enjoy each other and talk a little bit about our favorite team, the Mississippi State Bulldogs. And man, it feels so good to win. It feels so good to win, especially when you win the rivalry game and you get to talk a little trash. Maybe you saw our graphic kind of making fun of the Beat State shirts. The 50% off promo code The Dentist. And then, of course, Keyshawn Murphy with a picture for the ages. In, what are they calling that place now? The Black Family something? Anyway, but nevertheless, Ole Miss is Tadpad 2.0. There's Keyshawn Murphy wearing a Beach State shirt that's probably about a 5X. And kind of got this smug look on his face after the Bulldogs have swept Ole Miss in men's basketball. And it's not like sweeping an ordinary Ole Miss basketball team. It's a good basketball team. And you guys that have kind of followed along this year, you understand. I mean, this is not just a rivalry win, but a big game against another NCAA tournament team. Not once, but twice. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. Longtime sponsors of this show. Man, we love them. I'm going to be in there this week. Looking forward to that. It's always nice when I can work some Bulldog Burger Company into my weekly, meal schedule. It's always great because sometimes you just simply have to treat yourself, and you can do so at Bulldog Burger Company. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Star Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. I need some spring rolls. I feel like I'm looking a little bit haggard. I don't need your response. I always look a little ratty anyway. But, I can tell I've been lacking a little bit of my spring roll routine. So I maybe need to ramp that up a little bit, maybe once a week, you know. Have the spring rolls to make you and everybody around you better looking, and get a great restaurant-quality hamburger. If you're a newbie to Bulldog Burger Company, get the Bulldog. I can't recommend it highly enough. But if you're a Bulldog Burger Company veteran, maybe it's time to branch out a little bit. Maybe you have your own favorites. Maybe it's time for some new favorites. Be sure to ask about the specials. They've always got some interesting items that are available for a limited time. And get that chocolate shake to go. You'll be glad you did. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, a place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay, let's jump right into men's basketball. We're going to talk about our win. We're going to look ahead to the Texas A&M game. Bulldogs ranked in both polls again. It's a good thing. So let's kind of get into this, because we can't talk about beating Ole Miss enough. And Chris Jans now 5-1. You know, Ben Howland at times kind of struggled with that, but it was so weird. Like, they would win here, we would win there, but nobody could ever kind of get the upper hand. But Chris Jans, it kind of seems to understand how important that game is. And think about your favorite coaches over the years in every sport. You know, it's the coach that has emphasized the rivalry. Now, not at the expense of the rest of the season, right? The rivalry is just part of the journey, right? It's not a destination. There were some times, you know, years ago when things weren't always so great at Mississippi State, and, you know, we, especially in football, we'd struggle and struggle, and our students and our alums were just like, man, just beat Ole Miss. That wasn't the only thing we wanted, but we had to endure such difficult football circumstances. It's like, man, if we just have that golden egg, the rest of it I can kind of live with. And some people would say that kind of handicapped their expectations. I think it's just kind of a reflection of where we were, where is an athletic program back then. So we won't give you a full breakdown. But, guys, I tell you, I'll be honest with you guys, and I watched every second of this game like all of you did. You know, we come out, it feels like, hey, we're kind of in a three-point shooting contest. We're holding our own for a little while. And then all of a sudden you look up and it feels like, man, Ole Miss is fixing to pull away. And there's that, you know, that pit in your stomach that is reserved for rivalry matchups. And you're like, oh, my gosh, they're up 8. They're fixing to run us out of the gym. We're going to get beat by 20. But no, that's not what happened. Mississippi State kind of rallied back. Maybe around the 6-minute mark, started getting some things going our way. We knew that their bigs were not as athletic as ours. And I got a friend group, you know, that I text with all you guys. You know, you guys have those, you know, just like you and a few friends. And there's like a couple other people that are like friends of friends, and you all kind of end up in a group text. And I got a group text, and I said, after we beat their butts the first time, I said, these guys are soft. Oh, no, you're wrong. They're soft. Soft as Charmin. Especially in the post. Defending and rebounding are about toughness and effort. Ole Miss doesn't have that. They have some big wins now, I'm not going to lie. You know, they went over Alabama and Kentucky. I'm envious of those. But Ole Miss is kind of a finesse team. And Chris Beard said as much in postgame. But again, Bulldogs battle back to take a 7-point lead at the break. And honestly, it felt like it could have been a little bit worse. In the second half, of course, State, you know, kind of, you know, we do our thing, knock the free throws down late. They had a couple trash baskets to make that score look a little bit better than it was. Bulldogs win 81-71. Bulldogs now 18-7 overall, 6-6 in the conference. Ole Miss 19-7 overall and 8-5 in the SEC. And again, yeah, they've won some games that maybe people didn't expect they would have, and we've lost some games we probably shouldn't have. But looking back, R.J. Melendez, kind of the resurgence of R.J. Melendez. I mentioned this on the Bo Bounds show this morning. I've just kind of wondered ever since he took that bad spill, you know, against Alabama, had he been right? Well, he was right on Saturday, 25 minutes, 17 points, 7-11 from the field, and the big three early, I thought, kind of set a tone for us. 5 rebounds, he defended exceptionally well. Hubbard with 16. Knocked down a couple threes, including that first one. Riley Kugel, good to kind of see him return to form. And also in the starting lineup again, 28 minutes of action, 11 points. Knocked down a big three. We'd like to see that proficiency get a little bit better. Did knock down a couple big free throws on the technical foul, I guess it was. Handed out 3 assists as well and had 4 steals. Michael Nwoko, maybe a kind of a quieter night for him, and I think some of that's just because Keyshawn was feeling it. Nwoko, 7 points, 3 boards, 14 minutes of action. Cam Matthews, again, not filling up the scoring column, but I don't think we win this game without Cam. I think Cam's toughness and ability to get out there, not only just fight for rebounds, but on the defensive end, it just seems like Cam's always making the hustle play. 35 minutes, 8 boards, 6 points. And it just kind of felt like he was in the middle of everything. Claudio Harris is a guy, too, that, you know, he's been streaky with us, but 10 points, and there was a stretch there where it felt like he carried us. And then Keyshawn, where would we be without Keyshawn? We've said it so many times. Keyshawn Murphy, 18 minutes of action, 8 boards, 10 points. And there were these critical junctures in this ball game where we needed to make a play in the post, and Ole Miss simply had no answer. It didn't matter if it was Keyshawn from the baseline, didn't matter if it was Keyshawn posting up. They just simply had no answer. When he wanted to get to the rim, he did so, at times with impunity. And Sean Jones, again, just 4 points. But, man, he's just kind of like, remember Vinny Johnson from the Pistons? That's kind of how Sean is, microwave, right? He just kind of brings in energy to this team, especially on a defensive end. He was singled out by Chris Beard, too, as a guy that did some nice things. And Delquan Warren, and it was one, just kind of a needle, kind of threaded on a great pass there from him, expecting some big things from him down the road. And is really kind of more of a true point guard. But, yeah, it was a good game for us, certainly. And State pulls down 48 boards, Ole Miss 36. And there were a couple of those, too, that we should have had, too. I mean, we just kind of beat them up down there. Technical foul on Jamin Brakefield. I want to talk about that a little bit, too. I saw some social media commentary suggesting that it was no big deal. It was a big deal. It was also the right call. Some of our Mississippi State fans are like, oh, he should be ejected. And if the shoe was on the other foot, she wouldn't feel that way. Yes, it was absolutely a cheap shot. And I hate to sit and assign motive of other people, but I think it was apparent. Melendez, it got a little chirpy out there, and this was a response to that. And, you know, Brakefield's a guy, too, that has been really good for Ole Miss, but we kind of got in his head a little bit. And that's, you know, kind of a microcosm, right? He hits him across the face. That's against the rules, right? And so the officials, I thought, got it right. Technical foul. Not one of these ones that requires a suspension or, you know, news from the league. You know, the manager's good enough for you, Karen, okay? I'm just going to lay it out how it is. But, yeah, I thought it was a silly play. And I thought rather than it be something that became a distraction for State, I think it was actually a distraction for Ole Miss. I think it was evidence that they knew things weren't going their way, and that they were in for a tough night. That's the way that I interpreted that to be. Because, like, you know, there's some times when you get somebody to break character or maybe reveal character that you know you've won. Like, I'll give you guys an example. I went into a deposition one time, and this attorney, who his reputation far exceeds his true ability, sat down, and he just kind of stared me down like he was going to mean mug me, and I just kind of stared right back at him, and he's the one that kind of turned away, and I knew then he was in trouble, and he was. He was in trouble, and he was so woefully unprepared for it. I reminded him every step of the way. But that's kind of what happens in all these things is, you know, in these emotional battles that require mental fortitude, the team that folds and loses focus ultimately loses the game. And that's really kind of what happened here. So, big win for your Bulldogs. And again, not just because it's a rivalry win. That's just kind of the bonus, right? You want to be able to sweep Ole Miss. And, of course, Christian's done that now twice. But we needed something to feel good about. It just so happened it was Ole Miss. And, you know, leading into this, we talked about a couple weeks ago, State needed that signature SEC win and that it might even come at Ole Miss. And after we lose the way we did to Florida, some people were like, you know what, we're going to lose by 20 at Ole Miss. They're going to want revenge. And it's so funny, you know, there's this whole, I hate to use the term self-loathing, but there is this segment of our fan base that always projects negativity. Always. Always. So rest your insecurity somewhere else. Okay? They're thinking, oh, well, they're going to be really mad, so we don't have a chance. You know what? We got a talented ball team, and I understand that we've had some difficulties. But to just sit here constantly, I know it's a coping mechanism. I got some friends like that. It's like everything they do, it's like they always project negativity, so when things don't happen, they get the emotional payoff, right? There's the relief. It's like, oh, my gosh, we didn't lose. But they build this up in their heads, like, oh, we got no chance to win up there. And then we do. And then they're excited. I think it's just good to be excited all the time. Yeah, things aren't always positive. I mean, that's just the reality of life. But we're not really a good matchup for each other. You know, when Ole Miss is shooting well from beyond the arc, they're tough to beat. When they're not as difficult to beat because they can't rebound. They got some show ponies up there in Oxford. It's true. So kind of looking ahead here, you know, we got A&M tomorrow night, and we're going to talk about that here in just a second, but or just a minute. You know, South Mississippi, a second could be 10 minutes or an hour or more. So we got number 7 A&M rolling in tomorrow. That's going to be a tough one, but again, we start talking about signature wins and locking up a berth in the tournament. You could certainly help your cause with a win there. We go to Oklahoma. I think that's winnable. You go to Alabama. I think that's tough. You got LSU coming in. You should win. You got Texas coming in. There's a possibility you go to Arkansas. It's going to be tough. But, you know, had we lost to Georgia, I would feel much differently. If we had lost to Ole Miss, I would feel differently. But you start looking at state success on the road in the SEC, and those are the things that really matter, is when you begin to compare resumes. A lot of people are kind of home front runners, but it's difficult to win on the road. Teams that win on the road typically continue to play. And we've been able to prove that we've been able to do that. And so, you know, again, you start running the numbers here and you start thinking about, hey, we got a chance here to pick up a couple of games on the road. You know, and maybe Oklahoma is the last one of those for us. But I'm not ready to write off Arkansas either. Not ready to. But you say, Steve, we only got two.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Two road games left. That's, well, we get three because you got Alabama. I just don't expect to win that one. And then you've got, you know, there's two in there, LSU and Texas. I still believe those are winnable games. We'll get to those kind of when we can. But, you know, looking at Texas A&M, they're just kind of quietly going about their business this year. And I don't know. They're ranked in the top 10, but it's like nobody's talking about them. You know what I mean? It's just one of those weird things. And I suspect, like the casual fan of the SEC, if you mention to them, hey, we beat A&M, they'd be, are they good this year? Yeah, they're 20-5 overall, Jim. And 9-3 in the conference. They've won five games in a row. And Buzz's teams always seem to find something late. It's weird. They're 12-1 at home and 4-3 on the road in true road games. So not a great road team, and that's kind of been kind of a testament of Buzz too. They've been a team that defends the home court well, but maybe not so much. And it doesn't matter where he's been. And also, that's just a testament to this league. Yeah, it's so difficult to win on the road in the Southeastern Conference. And so we need to make it more difficult. And you can see your administration. They've been kind of pumping it out there. Pack the hump, pack the hump. We need you to hump. And I know that our students are going to show up. And I know that our students are going to lead the way. And I know that our students are going to ensure that that is a very, very, very exciting atmosphere. And I won't be with you. I'll be in Hattiesburg covering baseball, and we're going to get to that later in the show. But let's take a quick look at Texas A&M. Again, if I can clear my throat here, they just have kind of quietly put together a really good year. It's weird. I mean, it really is. I mean, because everybody talks about Auburn, and people have talked about Alabama, and, you know, you had the big game between Auburn and Alabama, 1-2, and there's always Kentucky, and you know, at times, you know, Missouri's done some interesting things. Ole Miss has had some big games. But nobody really talks extensively about A&M. They're almost just kind of an afterthought, which isn't fair to them. They open up the year losing at number 4 Houston by 15, and maybe that's part of it too. You get out of the gate slow and people just kind of sleep on you. You say, well, Steve, you know, Houston's number 4 in the country. Yeah, they followed up losing at UCF. So 0-2 to start it. And then you get to East Texas A&M, you win that one, you beat Lamar, you beat number 21 Ohio State. That was a big win too, and Ohio State was ranked at the time. You get Southern, And then you lose to Oregon out in Vegas in the Players Era Festival. You bounce back to beat Creighton and Rutgers. In the SEC-ACC Challenge, you hold Wake Forest to 44 points. Win that game handily, 57-44. They get Texas Tech in the Coast-to-Coast Challenge by five. Then they beat number 11 Purdue. And it's like I just ask myself, you know, why are people just kind of like, you know, A&M? You know, they've got a couple loud non-conference wins. Also got a couple of loud non-conference losses. They beat Houston Christian. They beat Abilene Christian. And then we get an SEC play. And they open up with a 20-point win at home against Texas. It's a big deal at the time. At least it was to them. Then they go to Oklahoma and play in the Lloyd Noble Center. And they beat number 17 Oklahoma by two. So you're 2-0 in the conference. And again, you've got a couple of, you know, you got that win over Purdue. You got a few, you know, a few scalps on the wall. You go, you lose at six, excuse me, lose by six to Alabama. And then you lose on the road at Rupp by a dozen. You beat OSU. You go to the Pavilion and you you beat Ole Miss by one. You lose to Texas in Austin by one. You get Oklahoma in the home and home and you beat them by seven. You go to Colonial, and just like everybody else that goes to Colonial, you escape with a very narrow four-point victory. They go to Missouri and beat the Tigers in Como by three. Beat Georgia 69-53, beat Arkansas by eight, and now here they are. And so, again, you look back at this, like they just really haven't had, you know, the bad loss. You say, well, they lost by a dozen at Rupp. Yeah, a lot of people do. Yeah, that's not a bad loss. But, you run through here, and you just kind of think to yourself, why have people not been talking more about them? And, you know, of course, for those that, you know, truly follow the game really closely, I'm sure you watch a lot of SEC Network and they probably touch on them. But it just feels like A&M has kind of been overshadowed. And I think that's probably the way they want it. Hey, we'll just kind of quietly go in here because the people that matter are the selection committee, and we're just going to keep racking up wins that matter. And we'll see how things go. And so another top 25 opponent, your number 21 Bulldogs, will host them on Tuesday, and then they go home to play Tennessee. They get Vanderbilt at home. They go to Florida, and then they host Auburn, and then they finish it up at OSU. You know, again, it's just one of those things that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It really doesn't. And again, you know, 9-3 in this league. You know, with losses, you know, the Alabama and Kentucky included in part of that, you know. And then, the one-point loss in a rivalry game. I think it's time that you take A&M seriously. So in the event that Mississippi State beats Texas A&M, it's not going to be one of these deals where it's just another team. This is a quality team and would be a great win for Mississippi State. Even, you know, they got a top 10 ranking next to their name. But this is a team that when you start thinking about resumes, and I read a column earlier today that said that Mississippi State is like one win away from locking this thing up and being assured of being in the SEC tournament no matter what happens the rest of the way. I don't know how I feel about that. But, you know, you pick this one up and maybe pick up LSU. You know, you got a chance to do some interesting things. You know, Mississippi State 18-7 right now. You get to 20 wins in this conference, and we talk about, you know, having a chance to finish at 500 or so. You start feeling good about life again. That's one of the things that we talked about in the beginning of this year. It's a long season. Things are never as bad or as good as they appear. You just got to let things play out. All right, looking at this A&M team, averaging 74.5 points a game. So they're not quite as prolific, you know, as some of the other teams that we played. You know, and so I think they're gonna play defense. We're gonna play defense. We're playing at home. You guys are going to be there to cheer our guys along. You know, I'm kind of feeling it, to be honest with you. And again, I know this is a solid team. But it's been a pretty rare occasion that somebody's shown up at Humphrey Coliseum and just kind of run us out of our own gym. Of course, Missouri was one of them. But, you know, that's kind of part of the deal. We hadn't played well as of late. But I think, you know, you get that monkey off your back, you've got an opportunity to kind of straighten things out. And Chris Jantz, a great coach. All right, 42.5% shooting. And just 31% from beyond the arc. They're a team that's been a little bit streaky at times. It's not a huge tenet of their offense. They'll take it if you give it. But it's not like the Nate Oates experience where you're just going to get off the bus bombing threes. Not a great free throw shooting team, just over 68%. So that's something to consider. Pulling down about 41 boards a game. So it's going to be a war in the paint. In that respect, I need Keyshawn and Cam to have a big game for us in Nwoko as well. 305 assists. That's 12.2 a game, and they've allowed 355. So, you know, maybe they're creating their own shots. They've turned it over about a dozen times per game. They're forcing just over 14, so just a 2.2 differential there. Points off turnovers for them, 16.5 for their opponents, 13.6. Not a real prolific team, I guess, when it comes to steals. They pulled out 8, and they've handed away almost 8 as well. Not a great blocking team. They only blocked 107 shots on the year, just over 4. And for a team that rebounds as well as they do, you'd expect a little more of that. You know, of course, some of that's about player personnel too. So we'll look at the conference scoring because we're much deeper in the year now. That's what matters most. So Zurich Phelps, 15.9 points per game, shooting about 30% from beyond the arc and about 38% from the field. That's an SEC play only. And he has started all 12 of their SEC games, one of two players to be able to claim that distinction. The other is Henry Coleman III. Only 1 3-point attempt for him and an SEC play. And not shooting a whole bunch either. Just 62 attempts in SEC plays, made 33 of them. So, again, by about 53%. But a guy that's pulling down about 6 boards a game. And it's not like they've got, like, a Hakeem Olajuwon up there just kind of being a rim protector and kind of a trash man to just pull everything down and put it back up. They're rebounding kind of by committee. Everybody's getting on the glass. As we talked about in our Ole Miss recap, defense and rebounding is about toughness and about effort, and it is clear that this A&M team plays with a bit of both. I think it's only fair. But in SEC play, they got 3 double-digit scores. We mentioned Phelps, Wade Terrell IV with 14, and then Pharrell Payne with 11.2. But, again, in SEC play, we talked about, you know, three-point proficiency, which teams that have consistently been able to connect from outside have given us trouble. Guys, they're shooting about 30% in SEC play. 81 of 269. Their opponents have done a much better job. And then we talked about free throw shooting. You know, they're even worse in conference play. Not much worse, but around 67%. But averaging 72 points per game in SEC play. And I start thinking, if we're right there around their average, you know, we got a shot. They're holding opponents in SEC play to 68%. So, again, it's about a 4-point differential. You know, how many points do you get at home, right? You start thinking about that aspect of it. If this turns out to be the typical Texas A&M game, I believe Mississippi State will win this basketball game. And, listen, I get it. I am not an unbiased observer. I am somebody that wants to see Mississippi State win in intercollegiate sporting events. But I'm going to go ahead and say it. I expect State to win the game. I feel like maybe we're over the hump a little bit. And I think this team is a better matchup for us. I think we got to stay out of foul trouble, right? We do. But this is not a team that can light it up from deep. And that's kind of been our Achilles heel at times. Even though we did a much better job defending that against Ole Miss, I think this is a scenario where this team actually regardless of ranking, regardless of SEC standing, this is a team that is actually a pretty good matchup for State. We like to take the toss-up games at home. And again, remember, this is an A&M team. It's 4-3 on the road. And so that's, to me, significant. A team that is just average on the road, a team that's not proficient when it comes to three-point shooting, a team that's not really, when you look at them and see, they're not even a team that you look at and say, this team is especially skilled. They're just a team that plays really well together. And again, we talk about, you know, these road wins that they've had. You know, they had a couple early on, you know, obviously in on conference play. But again, I'm scrolling back through here as we go. They've had a handful of games on neutral floors. You know how the attendance is at those games. Nobody goes to that stuff. How many times do you see it early in the year? You know, they're having this big thing at Vegas, and there's like 100 people in the stands. It's a great trip for the kids, but it's not a well-attended event. But, they had the win, at Indianapolis. And I guess it's technically a neutral court because that's not in that's not on a Purdue campus. But, the win at Oklahoma by 2, you can't sneeze on that, right? You had to go to Rupp. I mean, no shame in losing there. You win at Ole Miss. We've done that too. You win at South Carolina. We've done that too. I just share that because of the fact I think these two teams are a lot closer than people realize. And so let's just go ahead and call it. I'm going to call Mississippi State in an upset. And I don't think it's a major upset. I don't. I think Texas A&M just kind of quietly, people are filling out their ballot. Oh, A&M won again. Let's bump them up. I don't know that I would suggest this maybe is a top 10 team. The rankings and the record reflect that. But I think it's a game we're going to win. So we'll book it right now. We're going to pick the Bulldogs to beat Texas A&M on Tuesday night in Humphrey Coliseum. All right, it's time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R. I always have to double check myself. Blair is our friend in the mortgage industry, 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. 24 years of experience in that industry. He knows how to structure your loan to give you the best chance for approval. If you're a person that is new to this process, look no further than Blair Chandler. Get his more than 2 decades of expertise working for you. It can be a complicated process. So rather than overthink it, stick with a winner. Stick with someone that knows how to get things done. Thus the name Close with Blair. Bulldog through and through, has a place here in town, season ticket holder in multiple sports. So whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, look no further than Close with Blair and Blair Chandler. Okay, it is time for our annual rant about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees. Guys, I'm just going to tell you, I had the opportunity to go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when we were in Columbus, Ohio, covering the Women's Final Four. And I had to choose, hey, we're going to do either the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or the Pro Football Hall of Fame. The day that we had to travel, snow was in the forecast, and there was a winter storm, so we didn't do either. There's a part of me I'm glad I didn't go. Now, looking back, I wish I would have gone to the Pro Football Hall of Fame instead of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has become a farce. It is not about rock and roll. It is basically the American Music Hall of Fame. And, hey, it's okay if you have one of those. I'm good with that. I'm not good with calling bands that are not rock bands, rock bands. That's my opinion. That's my feeling. You may feel differently. And that's okay. completely okay. My feelings won't be hurt. But nevertheless, they have released their 14 nominees for the 2025 class. Iron Maiden is not listed. Makes no sense to me. Motley Crue, not listed. It's absolute insanity that those two bands have not even been nominated. And so many bands that are kind of one-hit wonders, you know, have not only been nominated, but also voted in. Guys, Iron Maiden has sold over 130 million albums worldwide. Makes them one of the best-selling metal acts of ever, right? They were founded 50 years ago. This would have been the perfect year to do it. 50 years after their inception to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Nico McBrain recently retired from touring. But, guys, Iron Maiden still sells out arenas, amphitheaters, concert halls the world over. And we can't get them in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It makes no sense. It makes no sense whatsoever. Obviously, I'm biased towards Motley Crue, but Motley dominated the genre, dominated MTV for basically a decade. We can't get them in. So of the 14, here are the four that I believe absolutely do not deserve induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. This will make some of you angry, and I am prepared for that, and I'm absolutely okay with that. Chubby Checker does not belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm just going to say it for what it is. Chubby Checker had the twist, and then we had Let's Twist Again, and then it was Twisting Time Again. It's a one-hit wonder, and he rode that for a long time. And listen, hey, he was an incredible performer, but the catalog is not deep enough for Hall of Fame induction. Manai, or Mana, whatever we're calling it, the Mexican pop band. Just no. No. It's not right. They're considered to be the most successful Latin America band of all time with 25 million records sold. Okay, great. They've earned some Grammy Awards. They've earned Latin Grammy Awards. They've earned some MTV Video Music Awards in Latin America. That's all great. Clearly a very accomplished band from Guadalajara, Mexico. But they're not a rock and roll band. And certainly they don't deserve induction over Iron Maiden. Are you kidding me? And then BJ Cummings, our friend, I know that he is you're going to listen to this and he's going to have his own opinion. And he's not going to like this. And that's okay. I love BJ just nonetheless. He's a great, great girl dad, very involved with his family. Also a guy that's in recovery, and I love that guy, man. I just think the world of him. But he's a jam band guy. And that's one of those things that I'm just kind of like, you know, hey. So Phish is nominated. People are like, man, you know, but Steve, Phish, they got a huge following. And they do. It's not my thing, but I'm not going to sit here and act like, hey, you know, these guys haven't accomplished something in life. They have. Do you know how many albums they've sold? You want to take a stab? 8 million. 8 million. I would venture to say that probably Iron Maiden's Somewhere in Time and Killers probably have sold that by their lonesome. But Phish got no business, none whatsoever, being in a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I will say at least they're closer to rock and roll as some of these other bands. This is probably the one that will be the most controversial, and I'm okay with that too. The White Stripes have no business in a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And Jack White's a baseball guy. I think Jack White is extremely talented. Meg White, obviously, very talented as well. Of course, they tried to pretend to be siblings for a while, and that's, to me, that's a vote against them, you know. About 7 million albums sold. I understand that you like Seven Nation Army, but that is not enough to get them in a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Or maybe it is. But here are the 10, and I've kind of listed them in order. And there's one that I'm probably wrong about. It probably should be higher. But of these 14, and some of these I don't think belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but I ranked them, made a top 10 list out of them. All right, number 10 is Joy Division and New Order. I went with the song True Faith, which is a New Order track. Now, one of the things that I'm going to tell you, and this is going to upset some people too, guys, Joy Division wasn't good. It wasn't. It's a tragic story. I mean, it is. But they weren't great. And all these people have this revisionist history because it's become such a hipster thing to do. Guys, New Order is so much better than Joy Division ever was. Listen, I get it. Ian Curtis, an amazing talent, but probably not enough to get in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's like, hey, you know, but Steve, you know, this is a guy that's kind of right up your alley, and it's true. It's just not very good. I don't know why that's difficult for us to understand. Not everybody is worthy of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction. And Joy Division took off when they changed the name and got a new singer. So New Order, I like them, but I also will tell you, I don't think they deserve to be in a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Number one, they're not a rock and roll band. And I know some people, but Steve, you know, Love Will Tear Us Apart was a great song. And I'm here to tell you, no, it wasn't. It's a very average, mundane, underproduced, poorly recorded song. And it's not great. It doesn't have a great message either. But if we're going to go with the two, and I know that they'll just combine the two together, we'll put them in. I don't think they deserve to be, but I'm not going to vote. But again, True Faith is my New Order track for you. I know many of you would have gone with Blue Monday. I didn't go with necessarily my favorites. I went with some that maybe we haven't featured on the show. Okay, number 9, Joe Cocker. Another guy that I didn't think belongs in the Hall of Fame. Joe Cocker, number 1, very unique sound, but kind of made a career on cover songs. It's true. Maybe you don't want to admit it, or maybe you just don't even know. But Joe Cocker, a very unique vocalist, another Englishman from Crooks, Sheffield, over in the United Kingdom. But, yeah, I mean, you know, he had some big hits, but they weren't all his. But I decided to go with an original one of his, and you've heard it and may not know the name of it, but it's Feeling All Right from Joe Cocker, number nine. Number 8, Cyndi Lauper. Again, does not belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. If you want to put her in the Grammy Museum or the American Music Hall of Fame, great. It's not rock and roll. That's not to say that she's not talented. She was, and we all know it. She's so unusual. Huge pop star in the United States. Doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. But we're going to go with True Colors, which is a beautiful song. And I think a lot of people in the beginning didn't really respect Cyndi Lauper as a vocalist. They said, you know, she's just this image-conscious pop singer that's kind of made by MTV. And then all of a sudden, True Colors came out, and people were like, wait a minute, she can really sing? And then she released Time After Time. You're like, oh, smoke, she can really sing. Number 7. Not a rock band, but I love them. Matter of fact, my oldest son, Ani, gave me an Outkast t-shirt for Christmas. I haven't worn it yet, but I love it. And I love Outkast. And I don't think they belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But if we're going to put a rap artist in this year, you could do worse than Outkast. We're going to go with Bombs Over Baghdad as your number 7 track. Number 6, an incredible talent. Has sold millions and millions of albums the world over. An undeniable talent. Doesn't belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But it's Mariah Carey. And I liked her from the beginning. And I remember the girl that I was dating. We went to Camelot Music, I guess it was. And I bought her that tape. I'm dating myself a little bit. I bought her that tape because she wanted it because she's like, oh, I love her so much. She got an incredible voice. And she does. And I went with Dream Lover. I love that video. And I love the song itself. It's just a great vibe to that song. But again, I don't think she belongs in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Now, the final five, I believe, do deserve to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I should have number five higher on the list, but I had already written the list, and I just, you know, I guess, you know, I don't know if I can go back and change this because I like to go with my earlier convictions. It's another American rock band from England. They had the American sound, but they were from England. And we're talking Bad Company. Paul Rogers, one of the best blues singers of all time. And everybody had 10 from 6. And I even like the Brian Howe albums. You know, I know I've got some friends out there, Richard being one of them, that they will agree with me. I like those albums. I think Holy Water was a really, really good album. And If You Needed Somebody, are you kidding me? Great. Great. But I decided to go with the classic Shooting Star. Don't You Know That You Are a Shooting Star? Great, great song in many respects. All right, number four, and this is where I think some people would say, but Steve, Bad Company probably should have been top three. And I could get down with that. But number four, I'm perfectly okay with them getting in, even though the run may not have lasted as long as it should have. It's Oasis. Love them. Loved them from the beginning. I remember the very first time I heard Supersonic on the radio. I'm like, who are these guys? I had to call the radio station and ask. And I don't think that maybe this current generation has embraced Oasis the way they should. You guys know Wonderwall, and it's a wonderful song. Well, by that time, we were already kind of in love with these guys. And Wonderwall just kind of sent them to superstardom. But I'm going to go back a little bit. We're going to go with Live Forever, because you and I, we're going to live forever. Number three, there's so many ways that I could go with this one. So many. I don't think there's any question about it. There's just so many ways that we could go. He was an accomplished frontman before he was a solo artist. And he really kind of broke in America as a solo artist, even though he was originally the frontman of Generation X, the band out of the London punk scene. We're talking Billy Idol. And I thought just because of the fact that I love Steve Stevens, and I love his whole approach to guitar playing. And he said one of the things that Billy always wanted is he wanted like that roller coaster effect at the beginning of songs to let people know, hey, here we go, right? Here we go, right? So we're going to go with Rebel Yell. And I love the tuned-down version that so many bands have done because Rebel Yell, at its core, is a love song. It comes off as a song of rebellion. You know, if you remember The Legend of Billie Jean and all that good stuff, what a great movie that was. But Rebel Yell was just one of those songs. It's a high-tempo song, and when you break it down and look at it lyrically, it's really a love song. Right. Number two, I really hope they get in. I think this is their first year as a nominee, and I think 8 of these 14 are first year nominees. But it's the Black Crowes. Not a lot of bands have done as much for modern Southern rock as the Black Crowes. You know, the first handful of albums, they just kind of stacked upon each other, getting better and better and better. You know, Shake Your Moneymaker was just quite the debut. And I already dug them. And then all of a sudden, MTV started playing their cover of Otis Redding's Hard to Handle, which was phenomenal. And a lot of people think it's an original track. It's not. But I decided to go with, really, this is my favorite Black Crowes song. And it's Thorn in My Pride, of Southern Harmony and a Musical Companion. Absolutely love this track. I have from the very beginning. Love Chris's delivery on this. It's just so well produced. The composition of the song is just next level. But number one for me, and maybe you see it differently, and it's cool if you do, but it's Soundgarden. You know what a Chris Cornell fan that I am. I'd love to see Soundgarden go in. There's also talk about those other half dozen or so unfinished Soundgarden songs being finished this year and released. All the lawsuits have finally been settled. And so let's get it done. Let's get Soundgarden in. I know Chris would be incredibly pleased. I decided to kind of take a little maybe a walk on the wild side a little bit. A lot of people are thinking, well, he's going to go Black Hole Sun here. I'm not. I'm not even going to go Fell on Black Days. I'm going to go with Burden in My Hand. Follow Me Into the Desert, As Thirsty as You Are. Love Chris. Miss Chris. If you've read all the acknowledgments to my book, I have mentioned Chris Cornell in the acknowledgments of every book. I always put God Bless the Family of Chris Cornell because he meant so much to me. And the most significant celebrity death of my life was when I found out that Chris Cornell was no longer with us. I still remember that feeling. And I first truly fell in love with the music of Chris Cornell and Soundgarden when I was in rehab. And I knew who Soundgarden was. You know, I had seen Hands All Over on MTV, and we'd gone out and bought Loud Love and just kind of had it rolling around in the backseat of the car. But a friend of mine that I met in treatment had the Bad Motorfinger album. He goes, dude, I think you would really like this. And I had heard Outshined, but I hadn't really listened to it. And I began to listen to that album for clarity and, in many respects, inspiration. And the next thing I know, I get Clean and Sober, and Super Unknown comes out, and it just kind of scratched me right where I itched. So those are my feelings. And it's like, well, Steve, why even talk about it if we're just going to gripe about it? Well, I mean, I just think it's one of those things that we're never going to change it. But this is a free country, at least for now. And we have the right to disagree. And so I know right now that, you know, somebody's going to hit me up and say, Steve, you just don't get Joy Division. No, I get it. I do. Just the New Order version is better. But I know there's going to be those guys that listen to like 120 minutes radio and things like that. They're going to message me and say, Steve, you're totally wrong. And that is okay for you to think so. This is America. You have the right to be wrong. And many people exercise that right very liberally. So that's our top 10 list for today. If you have an idea for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit me up on Twitter at ScoutSteveR, or to just, you know, hit Roy up, the keeper of the list, Roy Simonte, my friend. We're hoping that he'll and his wife Missy will retire in Starkville, so you know, we can hang out a little more and go to meals and things like that. And those guys really enjoy Mississippi State sports, and it's always nice when people retire here. And it's weird to me that I'm talking about friends retiring. But to retire here and be a part of, you know, our hometown Mississippi State fan base, it turns out kind of goes to everything as best we can, right? And so we appreciate Roy's contributions to the show and your support of the top 10 list. You can find Roy on Twitter at Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. And find our great list on Spotify under that same handle. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. I was at Campus Bookmart on Saturday, and but I need to go take out a loan to afford all the things that I want to procure from there. I love Campus Bookmart. I love the service there, too. I mean, the people there, listen, it's just, I'm not trying to talk poorly of anybody else, but the reality of it is you got people that have spent a lot of time servicing the Mississippi State fan base there. They're not just passing through. They're locals that are kind of excited about, you know, you guys. They're excited about Mississippi State sports. And I like doing business with Bulldogs whenever I can. And there is a business full of them at Campus Bookmart. Next time you're in town, go by and see their smiling faces. I got my complimentary hug from Susie, the lovely, talented Susie, on Saturday. I didn't buy anything. I just hugged her. I told her I didn't get my Valentine's Day hug, and she came up and gave it to me. Love her and her family very much. wish them all the best. But if you can't go by and get your complimentary hug, you can give the internet hugs. I know that's the only hugs that many of you are getting these days, but you can do that at campusbookmart.net. And by being a Lawyer Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. Well, it's apparel, diploma frames or knickknacks, housewarming gifts. You can find it all for the Bulldogs in your life at Campus Bookmart. All right, Mississippi State completed the sweep of Manhattan on Sunday. No real surprise. Manhattan did pitch it a little bit better on Sunday. Of course, it was a pitcher's day considering how cold it was and the ball really not traveling. There were a couple of home runs hit in the game, but it's just kind of interesting, you know. And I'll tell you this, after watching Manhattan, I think I would take some of my relievers from Saturday and my guys on Sunday and make them my weekend guys. I don't think the Braden Romero kid's going to make it. That's just my opinion. And I get it. People get better over the course of a year. But I thought Joseph Duffel was good. Kind of an interesting delivery. Hides the ball really well. State got to him early with two in the first, one in the second, and it felt like, hey, things were going to kind of cascade here. And maybe we push another seven-inning game together. They get us in the third and the fourth, and then they get in the fifth. They get on the board. Dylan Mayer with a home run to left makes it a 3-1 ball game. So I would never say it got tight at Duty Noble, but there were some people that were a little uncomfortable. And then Nolan Stevens kind of changes the complexion of things with a 2-run shot there in the sixth. The cap to scoring at 5-1. Bulldogs with 7 hits in the ballgame. Manhattan with just 3. Bulldog pitching did a really good job this weekend. You know, the one rare exception, you know, I obviously, trying to close things out in game one, you know, we kind of let things get away. Pruitt just didn't have a good outing. But outside of that, everybody else thought pitched well. Hunter Hines, one of the hitting heroes on Sunday, 2-for-4 with a run and an RBI. And one of the things I love about what Hunter's doing right now is he's kind of changing the scout. Like, he's not just being the Deadpool hitter. He had one hit this weekend where he just kind of threw his hands at it and guided it back up the middle. And there was another time that he kind of took the ball the other way. But, yeah, when you miss inner half with him, it's a joke. Noah Sullivan goes 1-for-3 also with a run and a hit. Nolan Stevens 1-for-4 with the 2-run shot. Aaron Downs stays hot. Cooled off a little bit, right? He just goes 1-for-3. Also with a run and a run scored in the ballgame. But Dylan Cupp, 2-for-3. It's such a small sample size right now. But I thought, let's just kind of take a peek. You know, we'll kind of get into our Who's Hot segment once we get a little more, right? But Aaron Downs leading the Bulldogs with a .571 batting average. I mean, you had to start him on Sunday, right? I mean, he had 7 RBI through 2 games. Didn't get an RBI on Sunday, but continued, you know, to swing the bat pretty well. Also 2-for-2 in stolen base attempts. I told you guys, I don't know that we're going to have a Dave Mershon guy, but by team, we're going to run the bases. We're already 7-of-7. And when I saw how slow they were to the plate and the pop time on that catcher, I joked with some of the people on the row. I said, I would run these guys to death. So 7 stolen bases in the series. Bryce Chance had one of them. Bryce hitting a cool .556. He's got 5 hits on the year. Noah Sullivan hitting .500. Nolan Stevens hitting .500. Hunter Hines hitting .455. Dylan Cupp hitting .400. I mean, if we get Cupp anywhere around .300 this year, that's tough. I mean, it truly is. It might be enough to get him drafted, too. Ace Reese hitting just .250. Ace got off to the good start, and I kind of get the feeling that he's pressing a little bit, maybe trying to do too much, but that'll all come, right? Ross Highfield hitting just .222. However, when you look at on-base percentage, you know, Ross getting on 50% of the time, on-base average of .500. He's been hit by the pitch twice, and he's walked three times. So five free passes against just two strikeouts. That's a ratio we will take. I am a little concerned. It's just one weekend. Sawyer Reeves was really good in the fall and especially in the spring. He got the first hit of the year and hasn't had one since. He's hitting .083, and that's the thing I think about. Do you shake it up a little bit and maybe move him from the leadoff spot? He is a seasoned veteran leadoff hitter, so you know at some point he'll work through it. But I wonder a little bit if maybe Chris Simonis doesn't drop him down in the order just to kind of get him going a little bit. That's not always the best decision. You know, when guys are used to hitting in one spot and you move them around, sometimes it hurts their confidence. But that's one of the things that I have been maybe a little bit surprised by. And again, you look up and down here, man, all the guys that got hits, man, it's absolutely nuts, man. Lucas Bugner, you know, had a couple of at-bats, and you could tell he was pressing a little bit. That's not the kid that we've seen in fall and in spring scrimmages. He will get it going. But, yeah, I mean, so, again, it is Manhattan. I'm not going to sit here and disrespect those guys, but we expected a sweep. It's the first sweep since 2020. But how great was it to see Stone Simmons on the mound? You know, it's been a great story. A lot of people have documented that, and rightfully so. And, you know, gives up one hit, strikes out five, walks two, gets the win. Team's hitting .111 against him. You know, again, small sample size. But, again, I think you go back and look. The weekend starters, you know, here's what you got, okay? Combined, you got 12 innings pitched. You gave up six hits, one run, two walks, 24 strikeouts. Yeah, you'll take that all day. And again, you know, Carson a little bit up and down early, but settled late, striking out five of the last six. You know, Pico was outstanding. Pico works the deepest in the ballgame, going five innings, and just faced 16 hitters. I mean, it's nuts, man. I mean, how efficient he was. Gives up just the one hit. But, again, a small sample size. But when I look at the bullpen and how great the bullpen was, Luke Dodson looked great on Sunday. Great. He gets a 1-2-3 inning. Chase Hungate was filthy on Friday. Nate Williams was great on Sunday. Guys, he goes out there, faces three hitters, and strikes out all three. Face four. He had a walk there. He had three strikeouts in the inning. But and Ben Davis did some good things, too, just worked a couple of innings. Mekhi Grant, the long-awaited debut for him this weekend. He goes, the one – I'm not looking here. It's weird, this Nate Williams thing. It's three at-bats, three strikeouts, one walk. Something's not right there. But Mekhi Grant, I thought he pounded his own really well. We know what his long-term ability could be. Dane Burns comes out, gets a clean inning for you. And then Charlie Foster made his college debut and will get his first college start Tuesday evening at Pete Taylor Park against Southern Miss. And a lot of people are like, you know, Steve, we're throwing a freshman. Yeah, he's not the typical freshman. I think he's a future Friday night guy. Now, he's got to learn to manage things a little bit better, you know. But he is a guy that we have seen since the moment he stepped on campus, that he is a guy that pounds the zone. He is a guy that can get some swing and miss. And I think all of those things are important. And I think that he is a guy, too, that can handle, you know, a road environment. Typically, you'd say, but Steve, you know, freshmen, you'd really like them to kind of get their feet wet and kind of get established at home. I think, hey, when you got a guy like Charlie Foster that may be in contention to move to the weekend later in the year, these are the kinds of appearances that are important. Now, Southern Miss won all four of their games over the weekend. We expected that. Southern Miss is a quality team. They did have a 10-inning affair that they won 7-6. But the rest of those games, well, for the most part, you know, Southern Misses from start to finish. You know, it was a little dicier, I guess, on Sunday, and the weather affected all of us here in the Deep South. But, yeah, it's a 5-1 ball game. But Southern Miss, four runs early and just kind of coasted to the win. And Lafayette, just three hits in that ball game. And so it's interesting, you know. And, again, this is a Southern Miss team that we expect to truly contend for the Sun Belt Championship. That's why it's so important that we beat them. Right, we want to beat these teams and then have them kind of go to work for us RPI-wise. If you take these two games from Southern Miss, the one in Hattiesburg and the one in Starkville, you need to be among the biggest Southern Miss fans in the country that don't actually cheer for Southern Miss. We need to win these two games against them, the one there and the one here, and then let those guys really help us RPI-wise. And we have a lot of respect for Southern Miss baseball. And, you know, we've been a little more willing to play them kind of wherever, you know, than maybe Ole Miss has. And I think the smarter thing for State is to maybe not play the neutral side game, be willing to go down there, Pete Taylor Park. We hadn't been down there in a regular season game since 18. That was the last series that Andy Cannizzaro coached at Mississippi State, you may recall. And that was the big joke is, hey, Mississippi State, you get swept by Southern Miss, you got to go. But, of course, there was a lot more to it than that. But Southern Miss right now, of course, it is, again, small sample size for them, just like it is for us, except they've got one more game under their belts than the Bulldogs do. But as a team, hitting 356, and granted they played Lafayette, not a team that's expected to do a whole lot, but Ozzie Pratt hitting 500. They have Joey Urban, who has been a reserve and part-time starter, 7 ABs for him, but he's 4 of 7, hitting 571. But Ozzie Pratt, a transfer from BYU 2 years ago, has had a really good career at Southern Miss. He's a guy we're going to have to deal with. Drew Barrett's hitting 385, Ben Higdon at 353. So you kind of run through there. They've kind of got, not maybe a set nine, but they've got a pretty solid core group there. And it seems like Nick Monastir has been there forever and a day, right? I mean, it's like he's on the Stone Simmons career path, right? I mean, it's just nuts. And then Davis Gillespie hit a couple bombs over the weekend. They got four as a team. He has two of them, hitting about 313. So, you know, we're going to have to go down and play well. We have to pitch it well. Of course, former Diamond Dog Jace Norton on the team down there, too, has had the one at bat. Got a chance to swing down there and ended up getting an RBI. Yeah. So I wish those guys the best. If there are some guys that come here and it just didn't work out for one reason or another, and I harbor no ill will in my heart towards them. Not everybody gets a chance to play at Mississippi State, and sometimes guys that do get a chance don't make the team. It doesn't mean they're bad players. It just kind of shows where Mississippi State's recruiting these days. And when they go somewhere else, I hope those guys have a great career. I truly do. Not against us, but I do. I don't ever see it the same way that maybe we do with football, right? Sometimes when people leave us in football, we're a little more bitter about it. I think it's because of the fact that sometimes that's kind of a testament to our recruiting struggles at times. They had a lot of guys that pitched this weekend. You know, there's 15 guys, you know, threw this weekend. But nine of those 15 threw just about an inning or less. Now, Colby Allen of Starkville Academy is going to start against Foster. He threw against us last year, too, but he had a three-inning save on Friday against Lafayette. And it's kind of a mixed bag appearance. And I don't know how deep these guys go, but these guys are competitive. You know what I mean? They're going to come out there, and they're going to do their best to win the ball game. This is an RPI climbing opportunity for them, too. But against Lafayette on Valentine's Day, Colby Allen goes three innings pitch, allows two hits, two runs, a walk, three strikeouts, a double, and a home run. And just 32 pitches. So pretty efficient there, but some of that also involved a hit by pitch. And he also had a first pitch double play ball that he rolled up. But, yeah, this is a guy that had a great career at Southern Miss and a huge year last year. And there were a lot of locals around here that felt like Mississippi State should have taken him. You know, looking back in 2023, 12 appearances in one start. He went 0-1 with an ERA of 11.57. He has kind of made himself at Southern Miss. 3.58 ERA last year, but he goes 10-2. He had 27 appearances, only two starts, so primarily a reliever. Had seven saves last year. So this is a guy that was involved in 17 wins last year. This is a winning guy. And, of course, the one appearance this year also a win. You know, so he's a guy that you know that they count on. And didn't have a great outing against Mississippi State last year, but it wasn't a bad outing either. State got to him a little bit, you know, that game in Pearl. And but, yeah, there's a lot of people around here that really felt like Mississippi State should have taken him. And, you know, people mature at different levels in the game. And that may be the case for him. But, hey, we wish him the best, and we hope that he gets a no decision tomorrow in a loss to Mississippi State and then has a great year the rest of the year, except against us, right? But we did, you know, it's, the world's a will to power. We want Mississippi State to win, but we don't wish ill on any of these young men that may be connected to us indirectly. But, yeah, this is Southern Miss team. It's really good. We're going to have to play good baseball. It's a great test for us, and I love the fact that we're going down there first instead of up here first. You know, a lot of people open up on the homestand. I like the fact we're getting ready to go to Houston next weekend. Now, I don't think it's going to be an incredibly raucous atmosphere at Astros Field. I don't. I think what we see in Hattiesburg will probably be a lot more hostile than what we'll see in Houston. So I think you're preparing them, kind of getting them out of the Mississippi State maroon bubble and letting them kind of get on the road a little bit. They're already down there. We arrived this afternoon, have taken BP on the field this evening, and we'll be ready to go. We'll be bringing you full coverage direct from Pete Taylor Park. And I don't know that there's going to be much Mississippi State media there with a men's basketball game taking place in Starkville. I suspect that we will probably be the only Mississippi State media down there. Dave Murray will cover the men's basketball game for us. Jacob Bain going down there with me for baseball. And it's a big ball game. Yeah, and the Texas A&M men's basketball game is a big ball game. We're very fortunate to have a staff big enough that we can cover multiple sports on multiple days, but we'll have full coverage over at jeanspage.com, and we just ask that you come be a member. You'll be glad you did, and nobody covers the Bulldogs quite like we do, but it's going to be interesting to see how this Mississippi State team kind of responds. You haven't had a lot of games under your belt, you haven't played a lot of games together. And I think that's something to kind of understand, too. It's like you're still kind of figuring this thing out, and you're kind of throwing them in the microwave, having them go on the road and, and play a very good Southern Miss team at Hill Denson Field at Pete Taylor Park in front of a crowd of a lot of those people. Like, we may have some respect for them. I think they're a lot more bitter about things than we have been. And maybe it's because of the fact that, State basically is wins about 65% of the games against Southern Miss. But, we have a tremendous amount of respect for the Southern Miss program, and I think they represent our state exceptionally well. And I can tell you, I know growing up in South Mississippi, when I was around that fan base a lot and when they were winning, it was difficult, right? And so I know, as a guy that married a Southern Miss grad, even though she is a Bulldog through and through, thanks to me, that, they see this as a, stair-stepping opportunity. And so we've got to be prepared for that. If Mississippi State shows up, kind of goes through the motion, Southern Miss certainly capable of beating Mississippi State, and they would love nothing more than that. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. If you're looking to bring a larger group to Starkville, look no further than staying at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, and when you do, the Facebook page auto-populates. You can look through all the pictures and peruse all the amenities available to you and your guests. Number one, it's kind of out of the way a little bit. It's neatly positioned just about 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. And that stretch on 182 is almost as long as it is to get. I mean, like, it's you're off the road a good bit through the Highlands, and you go over this little bridge, and there's a little neighborhood out there in the old country club, and there's a lot of privacy and quietness. You've got a couple neighbors out there, so we don't need you getting too rowdy. But, you can have a great time and not have to worry about interlopers. You know what I'm saying? Six bedrooms, two baths, soon to be three, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the patio area, the big back porch, the fire pit. It's such a great place. We have stayed there. We brought everybody in for New Year's, all of our kids. Everybody was under one roof. And you love the downtime, right? It's not just the entertainment time. You love the chance to just kind of sit and catch up and just be together. So whether it's a friend group or a family group or even a work group, maybe you should plan a work retreat, right? Just get everybody together. They've got their own, they can retire to their own quarters, but there's some common areas you can kind of recreate and socialize and even work in if it requires that. But this is a special place, and you need to take full advantage. Now, when you Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, some booking options are going to pop up. You're going to have Airbnb, VRBO. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website. That's what I recommend, because I've got a promo code for you, BSR10. That's Beautiful Steve Robertson and the number 10, BSR10, gets you 10% off your stay. Just by listening to this show, you're saving money at the ideal place to stay in the Golden Triangle when you're bringing a large group to town. Okay, final segment, show. We almost had a perfect weekend, and I hate to end on a down note, but very disappointing result on the women's basketball side. It's so difficult to go win on the road, but that was a very winnable game for Mississippi State. The turnovers have reached epidemic proportions. 18-9 now overall, and 5-8 in the conference. And, you know, we're still projected to make the tournament, of course. And some of that is the strength of the league that we're in and the fact that we have picked up a couple of big wins along the way. But this schedule is pretty favorable for us down the stretch, and including the one we lost yesterday, right? Those are the kinds of things that just can't happen. And those are the things that a lot of people within the fan base are like, you know what? I just don't have a lot of confidence in the direction of the team. We're just so incredibly Jekyll and Hyde with this stuff. You know, it's like, hey, you come out, you go to Vanderbilt, and you win in double overtime, a game you're not expected to win. And you go to Florida, one of the worst teams in the conference, and you lose at the buzzer. Terrible result. And again, you know, State was up, what, 8 or 9 points late in this ball game. We get outscored in the fourth quarter, 18-11. And it's so crazy, too. Slow start. We bounce back a little bit in the second. But at the half, State's down 6. Make some adjustments. It's a 10-point advantage for State in the third quarter. And you think, okay, we've righted the ship. We'll just kind of cruise on through here. And then we get outscored by 7 in the fourth quarter and lose on the final shot of the game. Absolutely crazy. Florida now 13-13 and 4-8 in the league. These are the kind of losses that erode people's confidence and your ability to get things done. Denham DeShields led Mississippi State with 15 points. Ja'Kayla Jordan with a dozen. DeBres Chapeau with 11. Chandler Prater with 10. Medina Okot with just 2. Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things, you know, she has kind of carried us at times. But in games like that, we got to find a way to make an impact. Now, it's a different kind of game. I mean, they want to get up and down the floor a little bit. She played just 18 minutes. You know, she's better suited for the half-court type game. And Montague just 13 minutes too, but 7 points for her. But, yeah, it wasn't great. And then kind of down the stretch there, we just continue to turn the ball over. 26 turnovers in the game for your Bulldogs, 23 for Florida. So +3 for us, and that mattered late. State with 20 points in the paint, 17 off turnovers. You look at the Florida statistics, 34 in the paint and 24 off turnovers. And those are two statistics that we typically need to win in order to win a ball game. But it's behind us now. And, again, beginning of the year, we felt like this was going to be a better team that we had last year and that we would make the tournament. We still expect to do so. We have the midweek off, and then we'll be back in action Sunday, the 23rd, against Texas A&M. And we need a packed house. Only 3 games left. This is probably the final home game that we're going to win. But, again, you take nothing for granted with this team. You know, they've proven that. You know, just when you start getting a little bit comfortable and say, okay, we're going to win these games we expect, you know, something happens. But we need to beat A&M, and then, of course, Texas comes in that Sunday, and we head to Auburn. And, again, just kind of looking at, you know, what's left for Mississippi State, there is plenty left to play for. And you keep waiting and say, you know what, at some point they'll find some consistency. It's been elusive to us in SEC play. It just has. Of course, Texas now leads the Southeastern Conference with a 12-1 record. They've won 10 games in a row, including the one over South Carolina, who's now second, and they got destroyed by UConn. But, you know, again, We talk about the schedule evening up for us, but you got to go take advantage of that. You know, we're 5-8, Florida 4-8, Texas A&M's 3-8, and Auburn's 3-10. Auburn's lost three games in a row, you know. So we're going to see the best and worst of this conference here in the final stretch. We got to find a way to go win these games, you know. You know, not making the tournament to me is inexcusable. Now, again, I've read some emotional commentary at times, and again, I want to caution you for this because I don't know that people have fully embraced this. We still kind of live in an emotional world where we want instant gratification when we don't get our way with something. I don't think you're going to see a lot of turnover in non-revenue producing sports in college athletics for the foreseeable future. You know, because unless somebody steps up and writes a check, that's not going to happen. Not to mention Sam Purcell. When you look at the totality of things and not just look at it on one particular snapshot of a day, when you look at how quickly he's gotten to 100 wins, and you look at what we've done in the postseason, and people forget this NCAA women's tournament. We had a chance to do some pretty special things a couple years ago, and maybe didn't have the team that perhaps we needed to kind of pull it off. But we're pretty much up and down. And it's so interesting, too, that so many people like, we don't have enough fire, it's easy to say that from the comfort of your living room when you're not at games and things of that nature. And so at the end of the day, it's not about style points. It's about wins and losses. But people advocating for a coaching change, I think you're going to be disappointed. And to be honest with you, I don't think one is warranted. Again, we got a little spoiled, for a long time. We didn't know if we loved women's basketball, and then we kind of found out, hey, this is fun. And then it was like every time that we took the court, we expected to win. This has kind of been a resettling of the expectations, and some people haven't handled it real well. And so, no, I don't think we should make a coaching change, and I don't think it's helpful to the program. For people to go out there and post emotionally on social media. I'm not judging. I'm just kind of telling you how I see it. But, I just don't think that, you're going to go out there and make some big emotional decision, for a coach that's expected to make the NCAA tournament. With three games to go in the regular season, we are still projected to be in the NCAA tournament. Losing to Florida doesn't help that. You may end up being 8-9. But the reality of it is we are still projected to make the tournament, and we should. And I think that Sam and the coaching staff and the ladies deserve our support as they try to finish this thing up. And I can't begin to imagine how awkward it's got to feel, if you're Sam, getting ready to have Vic Schaefer return to the arena that he helped, make pretty special on the women's side. And now you're here, a couple coaches later, and probably going to get a tremendous ovation. That's going to be, and Sam's a gracious guy, right? Sam will appreciate Vic's contributions to Mississippi State in respect for where he is right now. But, I know many of you, you're going to tell Vic when he comes in, I wish you were still here. I get it. But, it's behind us now. It is. It's behind us now. And so I think it's important for us to embrace who we are and not who we once were and focus on our future. I would be remiss if we did not give some flowers out to our softball team. Coach Ricketts and the staff have done a great job. Just a couple years ago, people were like, hey, I don't know, softball, And it's like the only time that all of our fans really pay attention is when we're not winning at all and we're winning big. Well, guess what? We're winning big right now. Bulldogs back in action Tuesday at News Park. So maybe get here early if you want to go to basketball. You can go check out softball and then go to the men's basketball game. Wouldn't that be cool, right? Make a full day of it if you can. But 9-1 now. Yeah, 9-1. And maybe you missed it, but like in the opening game, we played Texas Tech's big NIL pitcher, and I don't buy all these numbers, but one of the better pitchers in the country, and State gets the dub in that game. We lose to number 7 Duke, 8-0 in 5 innings. You beat Bethune-Cookman. You beat Penn State 6-1. You beat number 19, Nebraska 3-0. You beat the Salukis of Southern Illinois. You 10-run rule North Texas. You beat up on Bradley this weekend. And then you get Georgia Tech 11-3. You know, and so you kind of work through all of that stuff and you begin to kind of realize, hey, we are playing some real teams and we already have a couple of top 25, really, you know, top 15, top 20 wins under our belt. So, you know, big ups to this group. They'll play Samford on Tuesday. That's going to be a 4 p.m. start. So maybe you can swing by News Park and spend a little time with softball before, you know, heading into Humphrey Coliseum. I would recommend that if you're in town and you're able to do it. Many of you are taking off work early anyway to come be a part of things. And so it wouldn't hurt you maybe to just kind of get dinner to go and be able to just kind of eat on the move. The Hump's going to open, was it 4:30? And so maybe you can catch a few innings of softball and then tip off is at 6. So you can walk on up there from News Park and get your seat and get ready to go. But, yeah, we encourage you, if you can, go by and support the ladies. And, again, very proud of everybody that wears our logo and the way they represent us. And we don't want to be fair weather fans, but I'll tell you this. When we think about, you know, our weekend, you know, you get a baseball sweep, you get – the rivalry win in men's basketball, and then you look at kind of what softball's done, you know, like, man, Stevie, it was nearly a perfect weekend. And, you know, I hate to kind of say, well, you know, women's basketball screwed it up. I mean, it basically, guys, it boiled down to one shot. You know, one shot stopped us from having a perfect sports weekend. And if we are in a position where that's what we're complaining about, we're in a pretty good spot. And I think it's important for us to kind of acknowledge that, too. And you know, it's so easy to go up and down this roller coaster. I do too. I just don't get behind the microphone when I'm especially salty. But I love Mississippi State, and I want Mississippi State to win in everything. And I want us to win big. I don't want us to just be a postseason team. You know, I've always said that I think, you know, if it were me, you know, it's not a goal to make a bowl in football. That's not the goal. You know, that should be a foundational standard. That should be the expectation that we're going to be in a bowl game every year. And we got to take whatever steps necessary to ensure that happens. We had 13 straight years, and now we hadn't gone for a while. And it's frustrating. It is. It's kind of the same thing in baseball. I think making a regional shouldn't be a goal. It should be basically the bare minimum. I think that should be the expectation at Mississippi State. And, you know, it's difficult to make the NCAA tournament every year. It is. But I don't think it should be a defining achievement for us. I think it's okay for us to expect more and not just be happy hanging a banner or changing the decals on the wall at Duty Noble Field, unless we're changing a bunch of them, right? That's how I feel. I feel good about the ladies making the tournament. I'm eager to see what softball does in SEC play. I feel great about this baseball team, and I feel great about this men's basketball team, even though we have had some challenges against some of the top-ranked teams in the country. You know, a lot of times, too, you know, we forget, because these are our contemporaries and we play them every year, sometimes we forget these teams that we're competing against in the Southeastern Conference are the best teams in the country. And it's a good measuring stick for us, you know. And so happy about the weekend and looking forward to a great week. And one of the things that I'll say, too, about this baseball week, and a lot of people kind of sleeping on Missouri State. They went to Sam Houston and won the series up there. Missouri State expected to win their league this year. And so, again, you get through this week 3-1, 4-0. I think it's a big thing. You know, of course, you'd love to be undefeated, right? But – I think you got to win at least three games, and I think these are RPI climbers for us. These are teams that are going to be very solid G5 teams and teams that are very good in their league. And so this is it's an important week. That's what I mean by that. It's like it's not just about SEC play, as we saw last year. There's some people in my industry that'll tell you midweeks don't matter. Well, they don't matter in rankings, but they matter when your resume is being reviewed by the NCAA selection committee, when it's time to start assigning host spots and regional spots. These games matter. And so you want to beat teams that are going to help us in the RPI, and the teams that we're going to play this week will both help us in the RPI. And maybe not initially, but as the year goes along and we get into the month of May, we're going to look back and say, hey, if we were able to beat these teams, those were quality wins for us, and could be the difference at times between hosting and not hosting. I mean, it's that close, right? Everything matters. Everything matters, and it's important to understand that. If you hadn't done so, go to dutynoblebook.com. Maybe your sweetheart didn't come through for you, and you can get a signed copy of The Dude. All my sports titles are there, in addition to my book, When the Bottom Falls, which is basically a memoir about what it took for me to get clean and sober and what it's taken for me to remain clean and sober for 33 years now. And even if you're not a person that's impacted by chemical dependency, it's a book that I think that you could benefit from. If you hadn't done so, dial 662-268-7601. You can speak to my lovely wife, Dana, and she can give you all the details you need to come float at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. We've had a great week. Appreciate all the support. We turned 1 year old last week, so now entering our second year of operation and here in town. And it's been so rewarding to own a second business here in the greater Starkville area. And this one actually has brick and mortar, so we get a lot more interaction face-to-face with the public. And thank you guys so much. So many compliments. Some people have reached out and said, hey, Steve, your wife is great. And I appreciate that, and I share those with her. And I tell her all the time, but apparently she thinks that I'm required to do that. When you guys do it, I think it means a little bit more, you know. So thank you so much for your support of the business. And come be with us over at jeanspage.com. Nobody's going to give you better and more in-depth coverage of Mississippi State anywhere in the world than we are right here at jeanspage.com. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.